Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Can you just hear that building? And welcome to another wonderful edition of The Writer's Block, brought to you by Los Angeles, or LA Talk Radio. And this is Jim Christina, your host. And with Bobby Jean Bell somewhere on the outskirts of Tulsa, Oklahoma, by vehicle.
Bobby? Yes, I'm here.
You know, they have a TV show, Rawhide, roll 'em, roll 'em, roll 'em. That's you and Jim.
Yes.
Yes.
That is absolutely us, right.
Yes.
60 miles from Tulsa. Yep. And with a toll booth straight ahead.
There you go. Oh, my God. Welcome to Oklahoma. Well, I want to just remind everybody that this show goes out live. This show is a live program. And, of course, podcasts are available later on. But if you are listening, live. And we are actually breathing. And I'm hiding out in Idaho, and Bobby Jean is hiding out in a car in Oklahoma. And right now, we have a real treat for you. The person who actually books the guests on the Writer's Block is here in the studio with me. And Jerry, if you wouldn't mind kind of giving our listeners an idea of how they can get on the show.
Of course, but does this mean I get paid now?
I'm sorry?
Does this mean I get paid now?
Yeah, you get paid now.
Okay. Yes, I would be happy to. If you're an author, if you're a publicist, if you're an agent, all you have to do is very, very simple, is get a hold of me at guestwb@yahoo.com. That's guestwb@yahoo.com. Once you've done that, then I will be more than happy to send you our welcome letter and our bio information sheet and read them very, very carefully. Because if I don't get all of those back, plus a copy of a PDF of your book, which we never share with anybody. None of the information goes out to anybody. I can't book you. I have to have all that back so that you can be on our show.
Okay. Who's here next week while you're here?
Next week is Scott Johnson.
Scott Johnson, writing as?
Wes Rand.
Right.
And he's written a book called To Die For.
Right. And Bobby Jean, if you remember Wes Rand, I don't know if you were on or was out of Rush tonight, but he's one that writes about Dirty Striker.
Yes. I do remember. I'm excited to read this next one.
Right. Okay. Thanks, Jerry.
Well, I have one more thing to say.
Yeah.
It's very important for the people to get in touch with me so that we can go back and forth directly.
Right.
If we have another person involved, it just takes that much more time.
Right.
So, and I'm on Facebook, so get a hold of me. You're welcome on the show anytime.
There you go. Okay. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
All righty then. And now Jerry is unhooking herself from the studio chair, grabbing the dog, and boogieing out of the studio. And she's gone. Oh, almost gone. See you guys. Okay. Tonight's guest on the Writer's Block. She explores aspects of an uneasy past in her novels, Only Charlotte, Women of Magdalene, What Remains, and Juliet Ascending, all set in post-Civil War South. Her plays include The Familiar, A Ghost Story, and The Little Death, a Southern Gothic drama. Fascinated by history, mystery, and the performing and visual arts, she is a member of the Historical Novel Society, Mystery Writers of America, and the Dramatists Guild of America. A graduate of the University of Texas at Austin, she was a longtime resident of Houston, where she practiced her devotion to reading and writing with students of the Lone Star College system. She now lives and writes by the Eno River in Durham, North Carolina. Please welcome to the Writer's Block, is Rosemary Poole Carter. And welcome, Rosemary.
Thank you, Jim.
Thanks for that.
That's quite some credentials you've got going there.
Well, thank you. I'm a little static on the line there, but it seems like we've cleared up now. Good evening.
Well, good evening. And we are very, very fortunate and very glad that you're here with us tonight, even though Bobby Jean is out in the wilds of Oklahoma.
And that is pretty wild.
Yeah. Well,
I know
I'll
she's on the phone, so go ahead.
Yes, and that's so that I could read my notes on my phone.
Right. Right. Well, your new book, Only Charlotte, there's a reason we picked Gone with the Wind for this book. And but I have to say, I haven't read anything else that you've written, Rosemary, and that's mea culpa. But I have to say that the women in this book are extremely strong. And I am absolutely certain that you wrote it that way. But then you also, the kind of the men start out kind of strong, but they become kind of wimpy and then kind of strong again. And it's kind of like, wow. Were they really
well,
like
I
try that?
To make so, people complex.
Well, you made, you did. You absolutely did. The Lenore is a very strong lady, and she knows how to handle men. I mean, she's gone through, what, three?
Three husbands, yes. She has a new suitor when the story opens.
Right, and now she's trying to get her brother disentangled from his dalliances with Charlotte, beguiling Charlotte.
Yeah.
And the story just goes cattywampus from there. But it's a great read. It's Bobby Jean likes to say it's a wonderful romp.
Oh, thank you so much. I threw a lot into this. Sort of like
well,
a pot of gumbo.
It shows. It really does show. And you know, I have to tell you that Bobby and I read a lot of books, and we over the last 5 years now, we've read how many books, Bobby? 500 and
well, I think tonight's show is episode like 231. It's 52 books a year. We're into, so yeah, it's we read a lot, and this at 458 pages was one of our more lengthy books. But Jim,
right.
I found it really compelling. And Jim, were there some twists and turns that you weren't expecting, and some
I was going to say, and there are some, and I don't want to give them away because some of them are quite surprising.
No.
But what I do want to say is that Bobby and I have read a lot of books, and in the books that we've read some books that are 200 pages, and we've read books that are like 550, almost 600 pages. And sometimes it seems, and I would never say this on the air to the writer, but sometimes it seems like they keep going and adding stuff into their book to make it longer and not necessarily adding storyline. If you understand what I'm saying, they don't add anything to the storyline. They're just adding pages. I guess maybe because a thick book looks better than a thin book. I don't know. But
fashion comes and goes.
but I will tell you that I think yours is 408 pages. Is that correct?
Something
458. And I have to tell you, all 458 were germane. Every single one of them, man. It was fun going from page to page and see who was gonna, be screwed over next. It was really a lot of fun.
That's wonderful to hear. Well, it's a difficult book in some ways to pigeonhole or categorize. It blends several genres, just for your listeners' sake, to kind of let them know what we're talking about. There's certainly a mystery throughout the book. There's also a historical setting, 1880 New Orleans, post-Civil War, lots of tension going on there. And there's certainly some Southern Gothic flavor and a little bit of a love story as well.
Well, I mean, Civil War.
So I hope something for everyone.
Yeah, the Civil War brought out a lot of people. I mean, it brought a lot of emotion and behaviors out of a lot of people that normally wouldn't have displayed them. I think, and especially true down in the Louisiana, New Orleans area, Mississippi area, where actually, in actuality, the Civil War was over with for all intents and purposes in 1865 in April. But it wasn't really, because when Lee surrendered, he surrendered the Army of Northern Virginia, not the rest of the Confederate forces. So they still fought on for a number of months afterwards. And it just it seems real, real great that you brought forth in this story a lot of the stuff that was going on in New Orleans at the time of the end of the Civil War.
It was an occupied city for quite a while, and there was a lot of tension. And
yes.
So my story opens as radical Reconstruction has wound down, and a lot of the old planter class are trying to get their own back. We're seeing, you know, the beginnings of the Jim Crow era. And it's a heartbreaking time.
Right. And it's amazing to think that during this period, especially in New Orleans and some of the larger cities down in the Deep South, the ex-slaves actually started businesses downtown. And they weren't firebombed, but they sure as hell weren't populated by the white people who wouldn't go into them. They tried. They for everything they had, they tried to make a life for themselves. And your story just kind of captures all of that feeling, that general feeling of post-war crap, I guess, is Reconstruction, I guess, is what, which was horrible.
Well, you know, in creating the characters and beginning their story at the end of 1879, going into 1880, I did a lot of little timeline drawings for myself in the margins while I was writing, thinking about how old was this character when she came of age, when she, you know, was in childhood, young adulthood, that sort of thing. What was her background or his background? Because living through the war at different ages would have had a different effect on various characters.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, absolutely. Well, it changed everybody. Not only the losers, but it changed the victors as well. So you did a wonderful job of bringing time period out. Not many writers can do that, and not many writers have done that. And it seems like you had a good grasp on it. So some research had to be done there, and I'm sure that there was a lot of research done.
Oh, yes. Well, you know, some of it's research in books, going to lectures, going on tours of old houses in the area, and the various houses play a strong part in the story. One of the characters is an architect. And, you know, we're concerned about where do people live,
right.
How do they live? A dear friend of mine, and I dedicated the book to them, for about 10 years, they ran a bit... B&B in Marigny in New Orleans, and that's the house I picture my narrator Lenore and her brother Gilbert living in. Was built in 1848.
Well, you know, amazingly, there are still homes being inhabited today that were built in the 1850s, 1840s, 1860s. So I mean, New Orleans is a dichotomy. It's modern yet it's old. And it's an amazing city. I actually have relatives that live down there, so
it's a very good place to visit.
Oh, yeah, that's the deal. It's a great place to visit. A week, that's it for me. Let's take a couple seconds out here. Let's do a real quick ad for Out West, and then we'll come back and talk some more.
The Writer's Block is sponsored by Out West Shop, your online portal to great Western apparel. Log on to outwestshop.com to see the latest in men's and women's Western and country Western inspired apparel and accessories. Click on Out West Live for on-demand live Western music concerts, Western music and equestrian lifestyle radio show podcasts, as well as this one, The Writer's Block. Why not listen while you shop? Use coupon code RADIO to save on your purchases this month. OutWestShop.com delivers the West to you no matter where you hang your hat, door to door and around the world. Remember, it's always a great day out West.
And indeed it is, and for Bobby Jean especially, out there in the wilds of Oklahoma. Okay, Bobby, I didn't mean to be bogarting the conversation. I know you have questions written down in your little phone.
Well, this was a really compelling book, as I said earlier, and I was struck by a whole bunch of different things as I read it. One is, although it's lengthy, the cast of characters is not so lengthy. We have some minor characters, but you've given us, I don't know, 6 to 8, including like Ella, who's a, gosh, what would Lenore do without Ella? You've given us servants, some very strong servants, as well as this kind of main character group that are quite interwoven with each other. Can you tell us a little, and we get some different voices. It's primarily through Lenore's voice. But the story is told, I think, as a reader, we're following Lenore, but then there are times when we're given information or we're brought into a scene and we're not hearing it from Lenore. Can you maybe share a little bit about how the narrative of the story moves through the book, and how was that for you as a writer?
Well, I had experimented with different approaches, and a very wise editor advised me to make it Lenore's story, and that opened up a lot of possibilities for me. The first chapter ends with Lenore saying, "It is my brother's story, what I know of it, what I was told, what I suspect but may never know for sure, that I wish to now unravel." And certain sections are told directly from her point of view, first person. She's in the scene. But she's lived in New Orleans far longer than her brother. She knows the people they are dealing with, particularly Judge Placide and his wife, who are difficult to deal with and very powerful. And yeah. So anything that she is not directly present for, when she tells it to us as a third-person story narrative, she's taking a little poetic license. So really, her point of view is always there. She is inspired by going to the theater with her new suitor, and she's beginning to see the action around her as a play unfolding, which is one reason, you know, I limited the characters so that people could follow deeply those conflicts rather than being spread too thin. So she is always the voice behind the story.
And she's quite a fan of the Shakespeare play, A Winter's Tale. This book makes me want to go and reread. It's been years since I read that play.
And it's so beautiful.
If I had had time, I probably would have had it open next to me. tell us a little bit about maybe why you chose The Winter's Tale. What was it about The Winter's Tale that caught Lenore's attention?
The story of The Winter's Tale deals with a very difficult husband, King Leontes, and there's a few difficult husbands in Only Charlotte. And the relationship between the two women in Winter's Tale, the queen, Hermione, and who's so misused by her husband, and then her friend Paulina. And Paulina is the character that very much inspires Lenore to help another woman through a difficult time, to use her intelligence and her resourcefulness to make a difference for the good. And some of her decisions are difficult ones to make. She's putting herself and her loved ones in some danger by what she chooses mm-hmm. to do. But one of the things that was an extra lovely part of promoting the book here in North Carolina happened in Asheville, North Carolina. I was doing a signing presentation at Malaprop Independent Bookstore there, joined by actors from the Shakespeare in the Park group in Asheville who were doing this play right at the same time. And a couple of the actors from the production came and read scenes from Winter's Tale to complement what we were doing with Only Charlotte.
I found Lenore's not obsession, but grabbing on to Paulina for herself, and real compelling in a way, because I mean, the Winter's Tale is a gorgeous piece of Shakespearean work. I mean, there's no doubt.
It
truly is. And Paulina in Winter's Tale, albeit not being a huge character, she's large in the story, but for Lenore to grab onto her, and I can see where she would draw the parallels between herself and Paulina.
Yeah. Well, when we talked earlier this week before the program about things that might be helpful to your listeners who are also working on novels, this is the perfect place for me to recommend a book by Brandy Lynn Collins called Getting Please Into do. Character. She was an actress turned writer, and she uses the techniques of an actor preparing for a role to help writers create characters who will move and act in the reader's mind.
Ah, well, see, Bobby,
we
spoke about this the other night, Rosemary and I did, I told her that this is a program for new writers. Rosemary picked right up on that one.
Yeah, and I think as a
I think
reader,
I'm always a new writer.
Well, and as a reader, you give us that. There's a lot of description from the folds of material, the colors, you create an ambiance. They are like stage sets and like costumes and especially scenes with Charlotte, but even like the seance scenes, your descriptions from, you know, the vine cover, the vines on the velvet dress, or when Charlotte's given a very pretty sort of tea gown to wear, even though she's upstairs, we hear it, we feel it, we taste it. And that's all part of your ambiance, which in this book is really important. As I read it, I couldn't help but think of Jane Eyre and Wuthering Heights and even a little bit of Rebecca. There's mystery, there's eeriness, but it's not really out and out creepy necessarily, but
there's
always, you know, some mist and some fog, and there's always, you know, dampness, and you provide an atmosphere that's quite haunting without being
thank you
ghostly, if you know what I mean,
the texture of your story
there you go
is definitely done with whole cloth. I mean, there is no doubt, but it's told in a way that's almost madrigal, in that, you know, it's the song without the music. It tells a story that's point, counterpoint, and it flows so endlessly and easily. And that's what I really liked about this book.
Oh, you two are inspiring me to keep on with my work in progress with these wonderful words. Certainly the novels you mentioned, Bobby, are inspirations and books I loved as in my formative years. So, yes, those are very much influences me. And New Orleans is such a sensual city in so many ways.
Oh, it truly is.
And I wanted to bring that out in the book. And certainly Lenore is a complex woman, high intellect, lots going on there, and a very sensual feminine woman, too. So,
yeah, and she's strong. And of course, we learned that Charlotte, Charlotte has the... she's like a velvet, not hammer, exactly. She's got a ramrod spirit, very strong, but she's, when you give us backstory to her, you give us backstory we wouldn't have necessarily anticipated.
Okay.
So we find that she's, because she doesn't say a whole lot. She's not very verbal, but except with her kids. But you keep drawing us another little piece of her backstory. I found that was really engaging.
Oh, I'm glad. I'm glad it wasn't a waste of time.
No, like I said at the top, you draw extremely strong women, and to maintain that is really
well. Yeah, because
really,
even we won't, without spoiler alert, we have a couple women that are.
Right.
Not very nice, but they are also strong. You know, we have strong women all the way around.
Well, but you also have to remember, 1880 and it's New Orleans and it's the South, and there was a lot, well, for lack of a better word, there was a lot of bitches down in New Orleans back in the 1880s.
This is also kind of the beginning of spiritualism. Just bringing in those couple of seances and things, and I was sort of trying to remember when, as a culture, we began to experience some of that. Is that about the same time?
Well, there was a lot of resurgence of interest in spiritualism after the First World War, too.
Right.
You know, and this is after a major war with a lot of death, and you know, it could be plausible that someone like Helene Placide would set herself up as the medium. Yeah. One thing I learned from listening to an actor talk about getting into character years ago that made a huge impression on me, he said when he plays a villain or a character we're not going to root for, he puffs himself up before he goes out and says he's a fine fellow and he's got his agenda and he's doing what he thinks he needs to do. And I try to remember that with characters such as Helene Placide and her companion Margaret, that they have their needs and wants and they think that it's perfectly right for them to pursue them, even if someone else gets hurt along the way.
But isn't that same true today? When you really think about
it? Oh, yes.
Let's take another real quick break and little word from LA Talk Radio.
So you finished a book and you're holding your first copy in your hot little hands and now where do you go? Well, instead of pulling your hair out by its roots, how about you do this? How about you go to www.creative-edge.services? You see, when they were founded in 2016, they immediately showed they weren't the same as other publicity firms. They worked harder and closely with their individual clients' needs and goals and pushed to get them noticed. That's right. Creative Edge believes that communication is an important part of the partnership, and that model is how they have built their success. They collaborate and they work with local, national, and international media outlets and organizations to meet their clients, your goals. So Creative Edge, it's your brand and it's your future. Mickey Mickelson, Avery Olive, publicists, go to www.creative-edge.services.
Well, that wasn't exactly LA Talk Radio, but that was a pretty good commercial. So we'll go with Mickey and Creative Edge. We're going to break from break a little bit here, and we're going to kind of move over to your process for a bit. Rosemary, you okay with that?
I'm okay.
Okay. So what we like to ask our writers is, number one, where is your favorite place to write?
Well, now I feel very fortunate, and it hasn't been for too many years. I have a sunroom, and I don't have to go out to my day job anymore, and I sit with my little dog in the morning and a cup of coffee, and the birds munching on the feeder outside, and just write like a madwoman.
Oh, see, that's great. I love that, because I sit in my office right here, and I look outside, and I could see the garbage collector in the morning, and, you know, I could, I squirrels. And I push my microphone aside and say, not today, not today. No. What got you into writing? This is always a very special question for me, because I know what it did for me. But what got you into writing your stuff?
Well, because you'll understand this, that the Southern Gothic certainly plays a part in Only Charlotte and all my earlier works. My relatives, my grandparents in particular, were from Louisiana, and I grew up listening to some of their stories. I also grew up in, you know, the typical dysfunctional family, provided me much material. I spent a lot of time in my imagination growing up, created picture books, wrote poems. All those sorts of things at a very young age. I wrote my first novel when I was in the sixth grade.
Holy
man. And it was a medieval adventure. I just plunged in. I've never written with such abandon ever again. But it was fun, and I finished it 130 pages handwritten.
Wow. Sixth grade?
Sixth grade.
Wow. Now, see,
this book was not published. There is only one
book. Oh, well, yeah. I have family that was in Duval, which is right outside of New Orleans, up a little bit northeast.
Okay.
And it was in, what's the name of that? What's the name of that parish up there? Help me out, Bobby Jean. It was in my book, The Return. Anyway, doesn't matter. I have family that was there, and that actually McElhaney Island as well. That's they're out there on making Tabasco.
Oh, you're making me hungry.
Making Tabasco. Period. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. So you got into, but you know, it takes a special person, and I hesitate to say, not everyone can write historical stuff, because sometimes it just gets glommed onto their own stuff. To separate out and write a historical novel that remains in a historical vein, that's pretty special. And you decided to do that. And how did you decide, and why did you decide to do that?
Well, I think early on I was a horse-crazy little girl, and I loved to have my characters and the things I was imagining riding around on horseback or in carriages. So somehow I got myself stuck in the 19th century and never came out.
Okay, I'll buy that. I'm still there. I'll go with that.
Okay.
You know, I just... Bobby Jean, are you still with us?
Oh, I am. I'm just listening.
Oh. I don't know if you're in a hole or what. I have no clue.
Oh, no. I don't want to jump. I'm just listening.
Oh, okay. Okay. So when you're writing, and do you pants? Are you a pantser or are you a outliner?
You know, I'm a planner, I think. I make lists sometimes of what I want to accomplish. I draw diagrams of the path I want the story to take. So I'd say I'm leaning to outlining. I definitely like to know where I'm going, but every scene is an adventure when I get into writing that first draft.
Oh, sure.
But, you know, there's certain principles that carry you through, even when you're working with new material or trying to create something
absolutely.
New. The character's coming in with a goal, and then they're thwarted, or they're successful, or they have to compromise, or they have to delay. Those kinds of things that set up a scene and keep it going. They're just...
Are you... Can I jump in a moment and ask, are you also an artist? By chance?
No, I love art, and I have friends who are artists and singers and actors, and I'm inspired by them. Nonverbal things, sometimes looking at paintings, mm-hmm. watching ballet, I'll start mm-hmm. creating verbal images in my mind by mm-hmm. enjoying the nonverbal arts.
Mm-hmm. It felt like, at least using this book as an example, not exactly storyboards, but that's why I wondered if you even sort of draw out so many of the images, the way you might describe Charlotte with her children almost felt like they were lifted right off a painting, very painterly, the way the light, you know, you would talk about how the light played on her hair or whatever. And I felt often like I was in an art gallery going, kind of image by image. So I wondered if you perhaps were, you know, also an artist.
I wish.
Well, Bobby,
maybe if I could paint, I wouldn't write. But
well, Bobby Jean, don't you feel that a writer that's very good at descriptive also is an artist? If
yes,
you can see,
you know,
if you
Jim,
can see it in your head.
I mentioned this the last couple of shows after we read Sleepwater Beat.
Yes.
I have felt that I have been under the spell of a great storyteller that is just like those storytellers in Sleepwater Beat. And I felt that as I read this book, like I am being lulled into this world and I am following, you know, the storyteller.
Oh,
thank you.
Well, I mean, you painted pictures, and that is your artistry. Besides the fact that you're a damn fine writer, the artistry that you have is you paint a picture of a character, and it's extremely vividly there in my mind. It's like you can almost see the folds of their clothing and the wrinkles in their cheeks. It's just like wow, you can see these people, almost touch them.
Oh, that's wonderful
to hear. So kudos. And you know, the difference between this show and other shows is we actually read your book.
I do appreciate that. I appreciate every reader. Thank
you.
Well,
as do I. And, you know, hey, what's what we're here for? You know, Bobby is not a writer. She's a reader, and I'm a writer, and I'm also a reader. And I have a little bit more critical side to my questions sometimes in my comments than Bobby does, because Bobby's not a writer. So, but I don't have any with you because this story was so clean. It was just very nice.
Thank you. Well, the descriptions and your kind words mean so much to me. They're something I struggled with early on, and somewhere along the way, it's not that it made it so much easier, it just made it more fun to do, to think about how a character reacts and feels about the setting,
sure.
the other people in the room, that sure. sort of thing. That point of view, limiting it, is actually liberating, because mm-hmm. it gives me an angle to see things.
Yeah, I see that. And I also will make a mention, and because I am a writer, your mastery of dialogue is phenomenal. Your dialogue is absolutely spot on. People interrupt each other. They talk like they're actually talking to people.
Yeah.
And that is a real treat, and that's a trick that a lot of writers just don't have. And you have
Thank you. The playwriting experience I've had watching rehearsals, seeing my work done by actors, mm-hmm. Has made a difference. to try to give it that feeling of reality, that verisimilitude. We don't want to do it just a transcript of the way people talk.
Right.
We want it to compress the dialogue so that it matters. There's subtext. There's
right.
something to wonder about in what they're saying.
Right, because when a character is talking, there's not only words coming out of his mouth, but there's also underlying feelings going into that comment.
Yes.
And,
mm-hmm.
and
all the things that are not this.
Well, you captured that very well, and I again, kudos.
Thank you.
And now I have another question for you. Do you feel that your characters drive your story, or does your story drive your characters?
Oh, I think the characters drive the story. Certainly, I devote a lot of thought and time to plotting. I like a story to have twists and turns and suspense and mystery and all of those things. But imagining that personality, filling it out, and then saying, okay, I'm going to put you in this situation. What will you do?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. I get that.
Yeah.
I get that. Let's take another real quick break. And this time, Ronan, LA Talk Radio.
Hey, it's Jim Christina here for LA Talk Radio. And if you're like me and you love talk radio, but you just can't find anything worth listening to in that pesky little AM dial, then how about this? How about you tune into LA Talk Radio? You see, LA Talk Radio is the biggest and the best in LA and is a .com, so we have it all, from sports to music to self-help to, well, just about anything, including talk. And right now, it's coming right at you. Why don't you sit back and enjoy at www.latalkradio.com.
That, of course, is LA Talk Radio, being accompanied by, what's his name, Johan Smorgasbord, playing Apache, I don't know, in 1959. Okay, so, Bobby Jean, it's your turn to ask the question.
Yes. Do you believe in writer's block or not? And have you tell us why or what experiences you've had with writer's block?
Okay. Well, I believe in writer's block radio program. But,
good answer. Good answer, Rosemary.
I mean, I've hit roadblocks in plotting and that sort of thing, just like anyone else. My writing time has been so broken up and on again, off again, writing in fits and starts for most of my writing life, as also a full-time employee or full-time mother, full-time caregiver for various relatives. So there's been a lot of ups and downs in how much time I could devote to writing. That's one reason I like to have a plan, so that when there's a few moments, I can get something done. If I write until I'm kind of feeling like I'm not that productive anymore, taking a walk helps, doing something else, getting up, thinking about something else for a little while, and then coming back to it. One of the huge advantages to planning out a story is that maybe I'm burned out working on a particular scene, but I know I need to do something over in another scene. So I'll play with that for a while, and that'll keep me feeling a little fresher. But no, I don't feel blocked too often anymore.
Yeah.
I just get up and keep going.
That's actually a really good answer. I find myself, I call it writer's pause. And I find myself that if I'm at a place where I know the story is supposed to be where it's at, but I'm not quite sure how to move it forward from there. And I get a kick in my brain that says, okay, this is a really great scene that I'm looking at right now in my head. So I go to another page and I write down this whole scene, and then I'll save it. And then eventually in some place in the book, I'll get to it and I'll plug it in. Boom. There we have it. saves me a whole half a day of writing.
Such a feeling.
It actually moves you forward from your writer's pause from the other place.
It does.
Because now you have to get from that place to this place. I love writing. I do westerns. So I just like minor bloody.
Oh, wonderful. Oh. Well, I was at the VoucherCon Mystery Conference last weekend in Dallas, and it's going to be in California next year in Sacramento.
Oh, is that right?
But the panel that I was on had the moderator took a very interesting approach since we were in Texas, in Dallas. She said, really all of our mysteries, and there was quite a variety on the panel, were in a way Westerns. Somebody comes to town, he has ideals, and in my case, in Only Charlotte, it's Lenore's brother, Gilbert, who's new in town. He's the one who's going to face the bad guys at high noon, metaphorically. And so there's a lot of parallels. Westerns are classics.
Yeah, they are. Mine aren't exactly like high noon type stories. They're a little rougher than
well,
that.
Well, there's room. Well, absolutely.
They're a little tough, but they're more actually
they're
real.
Not your dad's. They're not your dad's or granddad's westerns.
I'm sorry? Oh, yeah. These are not your dad's
westerns. Your westerns are not your dad's or granddad's westerns.
No. And if you're looking for Louis L'Amour, you won't find him here. That's
he's got a little more grit.
Oh, a whole lot more grit.
A lot more grit. That's
and I have to tell you, much like you, I love writing bad guys. Bad guys are like the best things in the world. Because they can do anything.
Sometimes you have to get up and wash your hands after you
I know, you almost have to. But yeah, don't you? I mean, Sandy and Stinky are probably two of the best bad guys I ever wrote. And they were in my last book. And oh my God, they were horrible.
But, I could hardly sleep at night.
Well, Bobby Jean.
Rosemary, you mentioned about being at a conference and on a panel, and I know you belong to some writing groups. How have you found writing groups to be helpful for you, and do you recommend them for writers?
I do, and I think people have to listen to where their comfort zone is, what works for them. Years ago, when I lived in Houston most of my life, I was involved in the Mystery Writers of America Southwest chapter there. And we had big luncheons in those days and would have a guest speaker. And I would hear the writers who were published talking about their contracts and their plans and all of that. And that was very educational. A lot of writing groups now are online, and I know that's a convenience, and it's a way for people to network no matter where they are on the planet, and that can be very helpful, too. Sometimes just finding the right one or two special writing reading friends who meet with you over lunch now and then, that's what works best for me these days.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to have to kind of start wrapping this up. So why don't you let our audience know where they can find you and where they can find you online? And all your info, if you wouldn't mind.
All right. My website is www.poole-carter.info. And of course, Only Charlotte and my other books are available on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com as well. And you can ask for Only Charlotte at your favorite local independent bookstore, and they will order it in if it's not on the shelf.
Excellent. Now, have you got any good advice for any new writers out there who are just looking, chomping at the bit for some great advice from a great writer?
Well, I don't know about the great part, but I'm trying, and I certainly appreciate your kind words about Only Charlotte. I think you have to trust your instinct and your individuality. We all have our different temperaments, our different approaches. I can only say what's helped me, And I would definitely recommend the Getting Into Character book by Brandy Lynn Collins for people who are trying to create complex, convincing characters and throw them into conflict and tension. Don't make life easy on them. Make sure everything they say has a little subtext to it to keep the mystery flowing to the end.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And persevere.
Well, Rosemary, we certainly appreciate you staying up late. I know North Carolina gets dark early and rainy and cold, and my daughter lives there. So, at any rate, we...
Well, I took a little nap before.
Well, you know, what are you going to do? You know, and we just appreciate you being here with us tonight. And golly, come back and see us. I mean, I know your publicist is PJ Nunn.
Yes, and she's wonderful.
And we do a lot of business with PJ. So I mean, she's got us some really great writers, and yet another one for tonight. So thank you again for spending some time with us.
Thank you, Bobby, Jean. Thank you too.
Have you parting words?
Oh, it was a pleasure. I'm sorry that my phone is also giving my husband directions at the same time. I do apologize for that.
We don't want you lost.
You're driving
lost.
All right.
Sorry.
Go drive and we'll talk next week. And Rosemary, thank you again for joining us. And next week,
thank you.
Oh, no worries. And we just loved having you. Next week, we have, of course, Wes Rand and his Evil Striker series. And it'll be right on here at 7 p.m. on LA Talk Radio and at the Writer's Block. And for myself and Bobby Jean Bell and Russ Avison, who will be, actually, he's not going to be here this month. We're kind of out of here.